Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the San Diego Performance Academy. And we open the show today with some late-breaking news. A wind turbine has exploded on the Campo Indian Reservation, causing a brush fire. The fire is out, and we do not yet have the word on exactly how much burned. And now I've got on the phone David Elliott, who is a member of the Campo tribe and an eyewitness to today's fire out at the wind turbine in Campo. Dave, tell me what you saw.
Well, we were standing on the east side of our house when we heard a little noise, but because of the high winds, we didn't really pay any attention to it, just thought it was part of the wind, you know, doing its thing out there. We noticed the CDF bombers, airplanes that dropped retardant in the area and started flying around, and I said, hey, there's a fire over here. So we walked around my house to the west side, and sure enough, seen the turbine burning and nasty smoke coming off of it and whatnot.
Had it thrown off any fire down to the brush below?
Oh, yes, it did cause a brush fire, and the planes came in, and I guess it was pretty windy. They, I guess, weren't able to do a real good job because of the high winds, so the helicopter came in and actually saved the day. The turbine did start several spot fires, and the wind blew it, and it started taking off, and of course they brought in, I think it was a spotter plane and two retardant bomber planes and one helicopter. And
well, and how much brush, do you have an estimate about how large of an area burned and how long it took from the time the fire started, what time that was, and when they finally got this out?
Well, we first noticed, you know, the fire at about noon, about 12 o'clock, and of course the planes were in the air, like I said, and I'm not sure how much it burned on the other side, because there's a hill, mm-hmm. and they're on top of the hill, and it burned on the west side of, from where I'm at.
How close did it get to any kind of structures, homes, other buildings out there?
Well, there's quite a few homes, you know, close proximity to the turbines, mm-hmm. and, you know, within a quarter of a mile on, you know. But
How worried were you that this fire could threaten your own residence?
Well, the fire is very, very concerning for me, because if the wind had been from the northwest or from the west, then my home, which is probably one of the closest homes to the turbines, would have definitely been in danger and in trouble. And, you know, because we have thick brush on this side of the turbine.
Sure.
And it would we would have had a major fire.
Now, it's worth noting that just over the weekend, as recent as yesterday, we were under a red flag warning situation here for high fire danger, high winds, low humidity. How worried are you? I mean, ironically, just today we received word that the Campo tribe has gotten permission to put up one turbine for its casino, but the bigger issue would be McCain Valley. The Thule Wind Project that's been approved by the federal government would have about 100 new turbines coming in, many of them much larger than this one. How big a concern is that for you? Do you think they could handle a fire out there?
I imagine they could in time, but it's a huge concern. I'm sure houses would burn down and whatnot. Lives may be lost because we're out in a mountainous area with, you know, brush. And like I said, if that wind had been coming from the west, I would have been in trouble. My house would have been in trouble.
Wow.
And other houses around here, you know, would have been in trouble. So it's a huge concern.
Do you know who the manufacturer is of that particular turbine and what company runs this wind project these days?
Well, I'm not real, I don't know who that is. Ownerships change.
Right.
Change, you know, so I'm not aware of who might be the owners now and what models they may have up there at this time.
Yeah, if these are older ones or not.
They're, you know, it changes, you know, and as far as the owners go and whatnot, but you know, the turbines are, people think they're clean and green and wonderful and safe, and they're really not, you know, and you don't really realize that until you live close to them. And one of the other dangers that they put out is the huge electromagnetic field of energy that affects your health and your brain and causes cancer and whatnot that people aren't even aware of. A lot of people aren't even aware of.
Your family is one of those, I understand, that because you're at one of the closest houses, that believe you've been impacted. Tell us about some of the health issues that your family's had since these turbines came in.
Well, here on our reservation, some of the residents that live in close proximity to the turbines have... We've started having incidences of our tribal members of having cancer, where before we didn't have that, and now we have cancer. They seem to have caused heart attacks. They disrupt your sleep patterns. They make you on edge. There's a whole slew of symptoms that you get from being close to those turbines.
And there's a high level of electromagnetic radiation that has been actually measured coming up from the floor in some of these residences.
It does include my home. I have some of the highest level readings. We have documentation on it from the professional organization that came in and done that.
Right. We've heard some of the houses out there were as high as 1,000 times above normal. Well, we certainly appreciate you taking the time, Dave, to talk to us today. Give us the latest on the explosion and the fire out there. Is there any word yet that you've heard on what might have caused this malfunction?
Well, no, I haven't heard any word, but I live here and we hear them. Sounds like the bearings are going out on many of them, and they screech and they howl and things like that. So I'm sure they're all really pretty much ready for an overhaul of turbines themselves.
Well, we will definitely be looking into those issues, and you do raise an important point. It's not just how safe these things are when they first go in, but it's how regularly they are maintained through the years as well. That's very important, at least from a fire safety standpoint, as well as noise and some of these other issues, and you know, the amount of energy that they put out and so forth. So, Dave, we thank you for calling in. I'm certainly glad that the fire was put out and that no homes were lost out there today.
Yeah, so am I. Thank you very much.
All right, you're welcome. Bye-bye. This is a public service announcement from the nonprofit East County Magazine regarding the Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alert Service. During a wildfire, it's critical to receive timely news about evacuations, shelters, threatened communities, and other vital information. Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are available free to the public via email, or you can receive the alerts via Twitter on your mobile phone. You can get information on how to sign up for these free alerts at www.eastcountymagazine.org. The Viejas Wildfire and Emergency Alerts are produced by East County Magazine with support from the Viejas Band of the Kumeyaay Nation.
Now, straight from the headlines, we bring you the latest top newsmakers.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording in the San Diego Performance Academy. My guest today is Ben Colasso, the president of the brand new San Diego East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce. Ben, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's my pleasure.
Start by telling us, if you could, what led to the mission of creating a special chamber of commerce for the Chaldeans?
Well, you know, I'm sure everybody is aware the Chaldean American population in San Diego County is pretty large. In San Diego County and East County areas, there are approximately 81,000 Chaldean Americans, and many of them reside in East County and Rancho San Diego, and many reside in the unincorporated areas.
And for those who may not know, the Chaldeans are Iraqi Christians, many of whom came over here during the Iraq War. Some of them were here before, and they are one of the largest minority populations now in East County.
That is true. A lot of them migrated to escape religious persecution or in search of a better life. They do come from Iraq, the northern part of it. But now they have found themselves to be refugees scattered all around parts of the world, ranging from Australia to London to Canada, mm-hmm. and so on. San Diego is the second largest hub for Chaldean Americans, following Detroit, Michigan.
Right. And these are the descendants of the ancient Babylonians, correct?
That is true. The Chaldeans came from Nineveh, and it's an ancient civilization with many, many important and rich cultural positives.
Now, the Chaldeans that are here in San Diego, a high proportion of them are actually business owners. Tell us about that.
So there's a total of about 81,000 Chaldeans which reside in unincorporated San Diego, incorporated San Diego, East County areas. And of that total, 60% own one business. 38% of that 60 own two or more.
Wow, so very prosperous folks.
Yes, they are very prosperous, and they enjoy business and creating commerce and so on. And when we dug into it further, we figured how many of those belong to chambers of commerce? How many of those mm-hmm. thousands of businesses belong to chambers of commerce?
Yeah, how many did? I wondered, is this going to be a draw or a challenge for some of the other chambers that are out there?
Well, you know, we found that less than 1% of all those businesses belong to chambers of commerce.
Mm-hmm.
And so we looked into it further, and in that enigma was the reason why we started our own chambers.
Why is that?
They were needing education as to what a chamber does. A lot of them couldn't tell me or give the distinction as to the difference between what a chamber does and what a city council does, what Rotary does and Kiwanis and so on.
I see, because it's a very sort of foreign concept to them. They don't have chambers of commerce in Iraq?
No, they don't have anything even remotely close to that. And so it was our duty to bring this forward to them. And I'm happy to report that since we've had our membership committee open for 1 month, we have over 50 members, a lot of them professional attorneys, doctors, mm-hmm. engineers, owners of multi-million-dollar companies, and so on. So we're really, really excited.
What are some of the benefits the chamber has to offer its members? And also, can you give us an idea of a couple of your prominent board members or folks that are supporting you?
Sure, yeah. We have a variety of different benefits that our chamber gives, ranging from discounts on real estate fees to insurance fees to different marketing aspects that we can bring together. We have some of our prominent board members that we have. Our board is not just for Chaldeans. Our board is capped off at 15 board members, six of whom are Chaldean. Now, we didn't put a number at the saying that we needed six to be Chaldean and six to be Hispanic. No, we just picked the best and brightest minds, regardless of who they were. Mm-hmm. Our chamber is not exclusive. It's inclusive. So we brought together everybody from different walks of life, whether they came from a Democratic background, Republican background, business, professionals, doctors, attorneys, and so on. So they're all special, though. Mm-hmm. I can recognize that one of our board members is Jack Doyle. He was the first elected mayor of Santee.
Yes.
And we have a couple of attorneys. We have law students, real professionals. We have writers and realtors. So we do have a veteran. We do have a really think tank type of board.
Now, you had a grand gala to kick off the chamber, and that was held out at the Sequan Resort, I understand. You had some prominent political leaders show up for that?
Yes, we did. That was a wonderful event. And you know, it's really funny. I've lived in America now for 23 years, and I'd never seen it hail as hard as it hailed that day in our event.
An auspicious sign.
Yeah, it was I suppose it's a good sign if you're a farmer and you're and you're praying for rain and
rain
stuff.
Rain or hail.
Hail, yeah. But it was really good. You know, we had about 88 people at our attendance.
That's a lot.
And it ranged from the California State Lottery to Helix Water District to Cajon Valley School District.
Yeah.
Padre Dam showed their support. Assemblyman Brian Jones was there. We received a congressional award from Duncan Hunter, and we received an award from Senator Joel Anderson.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really special. It gave the opportunity for people to see who the chamber is, to meet the president. I was elected that day and announced that day.
Very nice.
And so it was really nice.
Do you have regular meetings if people want to attend? You know, when and where will those meetings be held?
Good question. You know, the best way to get a hold of us and to see what we all do is on our website, which is www.chaldeanamericanchamber.com. Our board meetings are held the first Tuesday of every month at 8 a.m.
Now, I understand that another group has come forward, backed by the Neighborhood Market Association, and they've launched sort of a rival chamber. They sent a press release out that we got announcing the Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce of California. And I understand that there's a little bit of a feud brewing there. Can you tell us what's going on with that then?
Well, you know, it came to our surprise. It's a basic case of infringement and trademark infringement on their part. And there is a lawsuit pending that we are suing their chamber and suing I don't even want to go far as to say their chamber. The last we checked, they are not a California corporation, and they hadn't filed any of the proper paperwork. They don't have a board. They don't have a place of meeting or honorary bylaws.
Honorary board members.
They have an honorary board, board, I suppose, and a Facebook page or something like something of that nature.
Now, I understand that they tried to get your gala canceled. What happened?
It's kind of sad to see that happening within our community. It saddened us a whole lot when they attempted and were successful in canceling our first location venue, which was at Cottonwood. Subsequently, Cottonwood is also hosts the Neighborhood Market Association's golf tournaments and other events.
So they rely on Neighborhood Market Association, the NMA, for quite a bit of funding.
I don't want to speak on that really, because I'm not sure, but I can only assume that they do. Mm-hmm. And not only that, but the owner of Cottonwood Golf Club, Daryl Eidler, is also being sued by myself and our chamber. And it's funny because it's such an easy case to be tried that it's actually being picked up by Judge Judy.
Oh my goodness! So you'll be on TV.
Well, yeah, we'll see if we'll be on TV. And you know what? Mm-hmm. He needs to be exposed for what he did, because after all, Mr. Eidler is running a business and he can't pick and choose. He either rents the place out to everyone or no one, and people need to know what he did and what Cottonwood is responsible for doing.
Why do you think that they saw fit to go out and try to form a rival chamber, or at least claim they're forming this rival chamber, instead of simply working with you for the benefit of all the Chaldeans in the community?
You know, it's a good question, and my opinion, and my educated opinion, is that the Neighborhood Market Association, although it wants to promote Chaldean values, is really hurting our Chaldean community, because most people don't know exactly what's going on behind the scenes.
What is going on behind the scenes?
You know, they don't exactly know that the Neighborhood Market Association, and even President Mark Rabo, went out and bought dozens of fictitious business names after the launch of our chamber in an effort to confuse people. They even went out as far as to make the same invitations, the same cardstock, same size, same colors, wow, same font almost, and wording.
Now, they've been in the news quite a bit recently also because they have been fighting the city of El Cajon's deemed approved alcohol ordinance, which you've recently actually spoken in favor of. Is that part of the issue? I know they represent a lot of merchants that sell alcohol and have been fighting this ordinance.
You know, I don't think that was the issue, that they are showing so much aggression towards our honorable chamber. You know, I had never taken a position on the deemed approved ordinance because it was a long, complicated ordinance that I wanted to hear both sides of the story on. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, until just this past Tuesday when you spoke at the council meeting.
Exactly. And I spoke for the deemed approved, and it's the bottom line is I want to keep our community clean. It's hard for me to wrap my mind around any store owner, after multiple times of being exposed or being ticketed by the El Cajon police, and saying, well, you know, it's now that they've had a sting operation done on me, this is the third or fourth time, I'm going to clean up my act now. I mean, listen.
Yeah, the ordinance, of course, for those that don't know, is designed basically to crack down on merchants who've repeatedly been caught selling alcohol to minors and or to serial inebriates, those folks that the police department has a list of and photos, who've been arrested many, many, many times for public drunkenness.
Yes, and to take it even a step further, is that day that I spoke for deemed approved, as we were sitting in the city council meeting, Channel 10 aired a story for two liquor store owners. There was a sting operation going on, and mm-hmm. who got arrested for food stamp fraud that they were conducting, up to $500,000 in fraud.
Oh my goodness. So it's more than alcohol. Some of these
right. And look, it's
stores
not,
are involved in some other maybe shady operations.
Right. And it's not the position of our Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce to – we are not a trade organization.
Yeah, so
we
you're are promoting ethical business practices?
Yes. I mean, if you're breaking the law – then you need to be put out of business. Mm-hmm. It's just plain and simple. Okay. This is not to say every liquor store owner is breaking the law at all.
Right, many honest.
Many honest of them are making a living. But, you know, the few that repeatedly break the law, mm-hmm. it's embarrassing for the rest of them. And you can see it happen. I mean, I've been to more city council mm-hmm. meetings than some city council members even. And to see the Neighborhood Market Association bring these liquor store owners to some of these meetings, And they don't even, they don't speak up for themselves. They rely on the Neighborhood Market Association to speak up. So it's, it makes somebody wonder, why are they really there? Do they really know what's going on?
And I'd like to add here that we have invited the leaders of the Neighborhood Market Association and this rival chamber to come on the show as well and tell us their side of the story if they're willing to do so. But Ben, I'd like to end by talking a little bit more about your chamber again, which is the San Diego East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce. What are some of the other activities that you have planned coming up, and what is your vision for the, your chamber members over the, and for East County over the long term?
Well, thank you for asking. We do have mixers every month, and these mixers bounce around, and we keep them really exciting.
Is there an email list people can get on?
There is on our website. On the right on the front page, you can join to subscribe to our mailing list.
And that site again is?
www.chaldeanamericanchamber.com. Chamber.com.
And Chaldean is spelled C-H-A-L-D-E-A-N.
Yes, C-H-A-L-D-E-A-N. Mm-hmm. And so you can go on there and see the different events. But there's a focus, or there's something I want to shed some light on, and this is our upcoming event. We're going to be doing a jogathon for Julia Garmo, a five-year-old with stage 5 cancer.
Oh, my.
And we're going to be holding that in January in partnership with Vista Grande Elementary School.
Oh, very nice. So, be sure to get us some information. We'll help you get the word
out. And that information, too, is on our website. There's a link right up there. It says Jog for Julia. Mm-hmm. And you can sign up right on there. And we are going to be doing the shirts for her and giving out orange juice and doing all that stuff and that event. So it should be worthwhile. Second thing that we're doing is one of our board members used to be an alcohol police reservist. And he was trying to figure out a way to, a lot of these bicycles that get confiscated by law enforcement and so on. We're trying to get those bicycles to kids that need bicycles.
Great idea.
So we're trying to, it's just a form of recycling almost, but it's to kids who need bicycles those bicycles that got confiscated by people who broke the law.
So this is not just about helping business, but it's also about businesses helping the community.
Oh, definitely. We are also working to donate 100 turkeys for next year. So we're going to feed 100 families.
Wonderful.
And, our board member, Najdar, he is a U.S. veteran. He is working with a supermarket to collaborate and to put together some sort of fund so we can donate 100 turkeys to feed 100 families. Our chamber also participated in the toy drive, toy and food drive that was at Viejas.
Mm-hmm. They raised over 12,000 toys.
Yes, we were there in strong numbers, and Stoney's kids was there, Rob's kids were there. Viejas tribe did an amazing job, mm-hmm. and we were just happy as a chamber to be there and to contribute to in whatever small caliber we can.
Absolutely. Well, Ben, I want to thank you for coming on the East County Magazine show today. I'm sure it won't be your last appearance. We look forward to hearing a lot more about what the new San Diego East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce is doing.
Perfect. I thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. After this interview was taped on Friday, we were able to reach Johnny Oram, president of the Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce. Mr. Oram said he served on the board of the Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce in Detroit. Part of our goal while I was there was to create a chamber in California, he told East County Magazine in an email, adding that he wants to give back to the community in El Cajon, where he says he was raised. Asked about Mr. Colosio's lawsuit, Mr. Oram said that Mark Arabo and the Neighborhood Market Association have nothing to do with his organization, so Mr. Colosio is suing the wrong parties. Oram accused Colosio of engaging in deception and misrepresentation, including trying to cancel the state chamber's event. Now, a press release issued by Mark Arabo and the Neighborhood Market Association stated that Mark Arabo and the Neighborhood Market Association are pleased to announce their endorsement and donation of $100,000 to the Chaldean Chamber of Commerce of California. East County Magazine subsequently checked records and found that, in fact, Colosio's chamber reserved its name back on August 28th with the California Secretary of State and received its taxpayer ID number for the San Diego East County Chaldean American Chamber of Commerce from the IRS on October 24th. A week later, on November 5th, the Neighborhood Market Association, in fact, purchased numerous fictitious business names, including the California Chaldean Chamber of Commerce, and numerous variations on that name, as well as close variations on the name of Colosio's chamber in East County. Although Colosio was first in California to register a Chaldean chamber, and has also incorporated his chamber, Oram says his chamber may launch its own legal action, claiming the Detroit-based Chaldean American Chamber that launched back around 2002 owns the copyright on the term. Mark Arabo with the Neighborhood Market Association has called the lawsuit by Colosio frivolous
adding, "We look forward to vindicating our position in court." In an interview with The Reader, he clearly threw his support behind Oram's group, stating, "It is unfortunate that Mr. Kalash's chamber is trying to interfere with the good things Mr. Johnny Oram is trying to do for the Chaldean community." Oram offered an olive branch, stating, "I invite Ben Kalasho to join my board of directors, and I believe that we both can do great things together, despite the fact that he has sued me." Both chambers claim to have prominent supporters in the community, though Kalasho contends that the state chamber thus far only has honorary board members. East County Magazine will continue to cover this unfolding story and appreciates the input from all parties involved.
Going away for the holidays? Are you concerned about your home security while you're away? If you live in the jurisdiction of the Sheriff's Department, you can fill out a form online and submit it to your nearest sheriff's station or substation. The San Diego County Sheriff's Department will keep a watchful eye on your home during your holiday travels. The Sheriff's Senior Volunteer Patrol, with more than 400 members, will perform security inspections outside your home while you're out of town year-round. And you can ask for this free service simply by letting the Sheriff's Department know when you are leaving by completing a vacation check form at www.sdsheriff.net and return it to your nearest sheriff station or substation. Let the sheriff know when you're leaving, and the senior volunteer patrol members will check your doors, windows, and garage are locked. They will also hide your newspapers and packages in your side fence or back patio. If they see anything suspicious, they will call for assistance of a deputy who will determine if there's been a break-in. Upon your return from vacation, you will get a welcome home letter listing the dates your home was checked and observations made during the visits. So again, to take advantage of this free service, complete this vacation check form at www.sdsheriff.net and return it to your nearest sheriff station or substation.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important consumer alert for parents this holiday season. Dangerous or toxic toys can still be found on America's store shelves, according to the U.S. Public Interest Research Group's 28th annual Trouble in Toyland report. The survey of hazardous toys found that despite progress, consumers must still be wary when shopping this holiday season. The report reveals results of laboratory tests on toys for toxic chemicals, including lead, cadmium, and phthalates, all of which can have serious adverse health effects on development of children. The survey also found small toys that pose a choking hazard, extremely loud toys that threaten children's hearing, and toy magnets that can cause serious injury if swallowed. The list of dangerous toys also includes items by major toy manufacturers, such as Mattel, as well as items sold by major retail chains, such as Walmart, Toys R Us, and Babies R Us. One of the most dangerous toys listed this year is the Captain America Soft Shield, which contains 29 times more lead than allowed by law. Fisher-Price's Loving Family Outdoor Barbecue and The Littlest Pet Shop by Hasbro both contain pieces that could choke small children. Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles pencil cases by Innovative Design contain cadmium, a toxic metal, while Mattel's Laugh and Learn remote was deemed a noise hazard at 85 decibels. That's 20 points higher than allowed by law, high enough to cause hearing loss. Now, the good news is that over the last 5 years, stronger rules have helped get some of the most dangerous toys and children's products off the market. Patty Davis, a spokesperson for the Consumer Product Safety Commission, said that toys are safer now than they have been in the past. Seizures of defective toys at U.S. ports are up, and nearly 10 million units of toys have been stopped at ports in the last 5 years. Those potentially dangerous toys did not make it into our stores or the hands of our children. However, not all toys are complying with these new laws, and holes in the safety net remain. So, parents, be vigilant in researching toys before purchasing them for your children. To get the full list of dangerous toys, you can search online for the Trouble in Toyland report, which we will be posting at eastcountymagazine.org. The East County Magazine show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM, Descanso.
Welcome to Vines and Wines with your host, Greg Manis of the Manis Vineyards Estate.
Hello, San Diego. Welcome to Vines and Wines. It's a radio show that introduces you to many of the rising new superstars and energized people in the local wine industry that will forever change the landscape of San Diego as it emerges into a brand new EVA wine growing district. Welcome to the radio show. As the 2013 year comes to a close and winter chill now begins to settle in across the county, I thought it might be a cool idea to share with you some amazing things that have happened this year in the vines and wines movement versus our normal interview with amazing upcoming winemakers. Even though belts continue to be tightened and more families and friends are reconnecting to be resourceful, we still need to be thankful for many things that I'd like to share with you. We've all been ever so blessed to live right here in the East County. It's just an amazing area. And with the new boutique winery ordinances now in place, allowing smaller families the opportunity to plant, grow, and make wine, have tastings, and sell their wine to the public with easier permit processes, things are definitely looking up. This year, we must also be thankful to our grassroots organizations, like the San Diego Amateur and Professional Winemaker Societies, the East County Vintners, and splinter groups like the Mount Helix Growers Association and local colleges from Rancho San Diego to San Marcos, now conducting viticulture classes that actually continue to hammer out the infrastructure of our rising new industry, encouraging novice growers to get on board, man. People's bucket lists are definitely getting smaller these days as they begin to educate themselves with internet help and plant their dreams. One day all of these groups may be able to form a new supergroup for total information that we can all share and learn from here in San Diego. I thought of a cool name. Maybe it should be known as VSD, or what do you think about Vino San Diego? Anyway, as these vineyards continue to expand across the county, grown by home and professional winemakers, they're racking up bronze, silver, and gold medals at local wine judging events in cities like Del Mar and La Jolla by the Sea. With stellar efforts, really, in such a short period of time. This is absolutely amazing and great news for America's finest city, for soon tourists will no longer need to travel up to Temecula or Napa or even Santa Barbara to enjoy dynamic regional wine that's grown right here, here in a myriad of microclimates that create wonderful grape growing. Time slips away from each of us each and every day, before our very own eyes. Remember the little sleepy horse town of Ramona? Well, it's now grown to over 35 bonded wineries and tasting rooms with delicious wines. And they're putting people back to work, influencing other little towns like Potrero, Campo, Descanso, Del Zurra, Alpine, Julian, and even my little town of Jamul to follow suit along the historic 94 corridor. It seems to be quite in vogue nowadays to get your hands dirty, dump your gym memberships, and plant a vineyard to regain your sanity and physical prowess back. It sure reconnects you to the earth, increasing your property value and lowering your water bill at the same time. So why not? Well, one thing is definitely for certain that we have learned this year. We must all remain diligent, educated, and inspired, working together with a glass that remains half full while we're here, working together to stay on the right track. It will leave behind a legacy of amazing people, stories, healthy vineyards, and mountains, and I mean mountains of wonderful wine grapes that can be crushed and fermented into precious sips of wine. Let it be known that if high-end grapes are grown locally, the best winemakers in the world will come here, like magnets to steel. This comes from Greg Manis. That's my quote. Another blessing coming our way is the California Farm Stay Initiative, allowing small farm and vineyard owners the opportunity to have guests stay overnight for visits with minimal licensing permits. Imagine horseback riding as you hop from vineyard to vineyard, sipping precious sips of wine under aged oak trees. Well, it's already happening here, my friends, in San Diego, the beautiful East County. So the next time you're visiting some of these up-and-coming East County vineyards, shake their hand and say a warm thank you for all they're starting to grow right in your own backyard. And hopefully, a little bit at a time, one season after the next, we will all begin to slowly realize that our glasses were never half empty this year, but have remained half full, and the best is still yet to come. As our wine journey continues to unravel, these are amazing gifts we can all build and share together. I'm Greg Manis of Manis Vineyards Designs. Thanks for tuning in today. With all of us working together, turning vines into amazing wines, dreams really can come true for all of us. So cheers, and here's to the rich goodness of sharing new beginnings.
If you know someone who's failing to pay court-ordered child support, you can now report them online anonymously. The county's Department of Child Support Services has launched an online tip line. You can tell child support where a person works or lives, and a caseworker will follow up and take the appropriate action, which could include wage garnishing or serving another court order to make sure that child support comes through. The tip line is not intended for custodial parents to report nonpayment because that would be faster served by directly contacting their caseworker. John Rosenthal, a community relations manager at the Department of Child Support Services, says basically this is a vehicle for people in the community who may be aware of somebody who owes child support and has the means but is not paying. It's another tool to help provide medical and financial support to children. The overarching goal is to increase child support payments to help families be self-sufficient. The department collected over $178 million in child support payments last year. While the main goal is to collect and distribute child support, Rosenthal stresses, it works with both parents to reach a child support order that accurately reflects the current income and custody situation for both parents. Caseworkers make many efforts to work with a non-custodial parent who owes money, he said. For instance, if a non-custodial parent is unemployed, a caseworker can refer them to community resources such as Workforce and San Diego Dads Corps. A button to the online tip line is available at sandiegochildsupport.org.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Drusilla Campbell, award-winning author of more than 15 novels, short stories, and essays, including two bestsellers, The Good Sister and Blood Orange. Her most recent novel, When She Came Home, is about an Iraq veteran suffering from PTSD who comes home to fight a different sort of battle with her family. My guest is also a mainstay of the San Diego writing community. She teaches at the Writing Center, the Ink Spot, and writing conferences. Welcome, Drusilla. It's a pleasure having you on Bookshelf.
Thanks, Raina.
You began your career teaching English in remote jungle outposts in Panama and in London's East End. How did that life as a young, educated adventurer lead to the woman and writer you are today?
There are stories all around, and really what interests me is people's stories. From early childhood, I enjoyed hearing about people's lives, and I came up in a family where I learned really early that I had to figure out what was going on underneath, what the, if you will, psychological aspect of my family was, even though I was just a little girl, and that was how I survived in that family. And that interest in why people do the things they do carried over into my adulthood. And when I traveled, I met people. You know, I think a master's in creative writing would have been wasted on me because really what I'm interested in is people. And you get out in the world and that's what you do. You meet people, you ask them questions. And I've found that most people are very willing to tell you their story. They like revealing themselves. I am personally a compulsive self-revealer. I have learned that the best way to get people to share their true selves with me is for me to share with them. I didn't always feel that way, but in the course of traveling from here to there, it proved itself to be true. So I guess I'm saying if just meeting people and seeing new things, but mostly right. meeting people, hearing their stories. That was the benefit of travel to my writing.
So you collected stories rather than souvenirs.
I did. I never took photographs.
Really?
But I have vivid memories of right. people.
You have the photographs in your head.
Yeah.
I know that after publishing your first two stories, one of which was science fiction, you gave up broadcasting to write full-time. It was a dream for a lot of writers. So what was that like for you to go to writing full-time? And would you recommend that kind of risk-taking to all those writers out there who are struggling to balance the day job and the writing?
I was so lucky. My husband said to me that he was willing to be a supporter of the arts. And he never once, in all the years when I wasn't published, he never once said to me, gee, you know, it'd help if you got a day job.
Right.
And so for me to advise people to take that risk, it's really inappropriate because in a way, it was no risk at all.
So you were fortunate. You didn't have that kind of pressure on you.
And that is a great thing. I always tell my students, show your work to people who support you. Do not show your work to your mother if you have a judgmental or critical mother.
Right.
Just, you know, she doesn't have to see it. Don't show it to your husband unless he supports the idea of you, or your wife, unless she supports the idea of you being a writer and understands that it's a hit and miss, luck of the draw kind of thing.
Right.
Because nothing kills the creative confidence better than having someone you love or particularly care about saying to you, God, this isn't any good, or I don't understand right. this, whatever the form of criticism takes. Before you're published, while you're working, always be in an environment where you trust the people. And really, my husband gave me that.
Right. So more important than the financial risk taking is finding support and gathering it around you at all stages.
Yeah. When I started, it was kind of funny. I was in Washington. It was a long time ago, and there were no such things as writers' conferences, mm-hmm. and there were no writing groups that I ever heard about. One day, I went to the Bethesda Library, and I looked up kind of how to write a novel sort of thing. And I found a book. There were only two or three of them. And I found one book I remember very clearly. I took to the table in the library. I sat down and I began to skim through it. And I came to this sentence where the guy said, if you decide you want to be a writer, give up on sex because whatever powers the sex drive also powers the creativity.
Interesting.
And I thought, oh my Lord, this is just total bull. I knew it right there. But I had no support group except this crazy book, which I disposed of very quickly. I had no support group. I just had this one person who believed in me.
Well, I'm glad you did. Let's talk about some of the topics you cover in your books. The Good Sister, I know that book deals with sensitive topics of postpartum depression and child neglect, and yet that story won the Theodore S. Geisel Award. It's the 17th San Diego Book and Writing Awards, and it was named a great group read by the Women's National Book Association for National Reading Group Month. Why do you think that this story, an intense topic, captured the attention of so many people, so many women, and what motivated you to write about those topics?
I had children, and I know that in the course of raising your children, you have very complicated feelings.
Yes.
And they're not always loving. Again, I have to tell a story because that's what I do. But one day when I had a baby who was about 6 months old, I was with my mother, and we were standing in line at the supermarket, and there was a tabloid with a headline, something like, Mother Throws Self and Baby Out 10th Story Window.
Ooh.
And my mother laughed, and she said, I know just how she felt. I looked at her. And that led us to, in the parking lot, sitting there while the frozen foods melted, We had a conversation about how complicated a mother's feelings are and right. how you can feel like slapping your kid. And she said, don't ever be ashamed of yourself for feeling like you don't love your child. She said, just accept the fact that you're not going to be a perfect mother. Mm-hmm. She wasn't advocating violence or anything, you know that. But I never forgot that. And I went on and I had my children and I had complicated feelings, mostly loving, but occasionally murderous. I was always very interested in it. And then there was the case of the woman in Texas who murdered her children in the bathtub.
Yeah, I remember that.
And she was so blamed for every aspect of that. True, she was guilty. Nobody denied that, including her. But she was just excoriated in the press. She was demonized by everybody. I researched that case very, very deeply, going into some sources which never came up in the mm-hmm. trial. And this woman was pushed to the brink of sanity. She was going to blow one way or another. And to blame her for the fact that she did this violent act and then not take the time to try to understand why she did it seemed to me to be a real miscarriage of mm-hmm. justice. And so I wanted to write about a woman who tries to kill her children. That's mm-hmm. not a secret. It's in the first chapter of the book. Mm-hmm. We learn that. I wanted to try to make readers understand how a really loving woman can be driven to right. do that as a matter of self-survival.
Really. So the hidden story,
the
really.
The hidden story. That really is what I guess that's a very good way of putting it. I'm interested in the hidden story and behind all the headlines.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that your most recent book, When She Came Home, it deals with another sensitive issue and hidden story in this country, which is PTSD among our returning vets. Very prevalent, I know. So what about the process of researching and writing about that topic? What was the motivation there, or what was the hidden story there?
Well, the motivation was it was everywhere in the news, sure. and very interesting at first, and primarily the cases that were talked about were always men. And it just, that didn't make any sense, because obviously we have women all over the Middle right. East fighting for us in one way or another. I talked to women who had been in the military. I became quite close for a while with a young woman who was a Marine officer who had been in Iraq, who shared some of her story with me. Mm-hmm. And I read countless books. Gosh, there are so many wonderful books being written by women who have served in the military. Mm-hmm. Particularly, I was interested in how a woman leaves her children and goes to fight. I began, like most of us, thinking that's just unnatural. I'd never do such a right. thing. I came to understand that really the desire to serve is as powerful in some women as it is in some men.
Sure.
And in order to do that, they learn to compartmentalize, because if they took their children to war with them 24/7, those children would end up losing their mother.
Right. Well, I'd like to move to a different topic, which is your teaching. In an intensive 2-day course that you call Novel Cram, you lead writers to building a better book, whatever their topic is. So in your opinion, what can this kind of high-pressure cramming session do for new and experienced writers?
Well, they have a good time, for okay. one thing. Pushed to the limits, I can be quite funny, and so we enjoy the intensity. It's so intense to be virtually closed in a room for a total of 16 to 20 hours on a weekend and to talk nothing but their book, because one of the characteristics of Novel Cram is that there will be a room of maybe 16 to 20 people, like to keep it closer to 16, and I talk to each one throughout the weekend about their particular book. So that by the end, I know the main characters, I know the conflict of 16 fledgling books.
Wow.
And it's a rush if you're a writer who hasn't been published to have somebody take your work seriously. Mm-hmm. And I take their work very seriously. For me, there is nothing better than knowing that because of my help, they've been able to find the writer inside themselves. But it doesn't just happen accidentally. The actual business of writing a novel is a very complicated and crafty thing. I'm not talking about inspiration. I'm not talking about talent. I'm just talking about the things that every novel has to have in it. I mean, going way back to Ulysses. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are stories. Stories have to have inciting incidents. They have to have conflict. They have to have a powerful story question that carries the length of the book. Mm-hmm. And it says basic. It's sort of the DNA of novels. Mm-hmm. And the DNA of novels hasn't changed in any large sense since the very beginning.
That's very true. Storytelling.
Yeah.
An ancient art.
And I help them figure out how to do that.
That's great. It sounds like a good experience. One last question, Drusilla. What are you writing now and when will it be available?
I just sent off my most recent manuscript. It went into production on Monday, which means that 6 months from now.
And the title?
It's called In Doubt.
In Doubt.
And it's a story about a female attorney who is set to defend a boy who tries to kill the governor of the state of California.
Another intense subject.
Yes, another intense subject. And it's a terrific story, a really terrific story. I'm very excited about this one. And it's called In Doubt, and I hope it's going to be followed by a book called Find Me, which I'm beginning to work with now. I'm at the thinking about it obsessively stage.
Well, we look forward to seeing it. Our time is up now, but it's been a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you, Raina.
And if you would like more information on Drusilla Campbell and her books, please visit her website at www.drusillacampbell.com. And again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
East County Magazine has compiled some important holiday safety tips for you with help from Fire Chief Sam D. Giovanna, our Chief's Corner columnist. 'Tis the season for hanging holiday decorations. One of the most common causes of holiday time house fires results from those bulbs being too close to gutters filled with dried out leaves. Make sure that strings of lights you're using outside have built-in fuses on the lines. Check the plug and be sure you're using lights designated for outdoor use only. Use Christmas lights and electric equipment that have been tested and verified by a reliable testing laboratory. If you have a string of lights with a blown bulb, be sure to replace it with a bulb of the same wattage. Avoid using nails, tacks, or metal staples to secure your outdoor Christmas lights. Instead, use insulated hooks. Be sure your lights are strung tightly to avoid damage from the wind. Use only outdoor-rated extension cords. Connect no more than 3 strings of lights to a single extension cord, and all plugs should be plugged into a GFCI-protected outlet when used outdoors. Now, if you're using a ladder to put your holiday decorations up, be careful. Don't place the ladder in a muddy location. Watch for overhead wires. When climbing the ladder, use caution and have someone secure the ladder for you. Also, be sure to replace any cords that are worn or frayed, or decorations that are broken or rusted. Never put candles near your Christmas tree or other holiday decorations. Run tree lights only when you are home, and don't turn on the tree lights if your tree has become too dry at the end of the season. It's also a good idea to place your tree and other holiday decorations a safe distance away from the fireplace. Always put safety first to assure a happy holiday season. You can get more safety tips by visiting the Chief's Corner column at our website, www.eastcountymagazine.org.
A free press isn't free. KNSJ Radio has made great strides since launching our independent media outlet on the 4th of July, but to take it to the next level, we need your help. We need sponsors and donors to help fund a new studio in the heart of East County, where we can broadcast news, arts and cultural programming, and respond quickly with live reporting during wildfires and other emergencies. We also need funds for recording equipment, transmitter fees, local show production, and syndicated programming costs. Support our public nonprofit radio station by donating at www.knsj.org. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the San Diego Performance Academy for the use of their studio, to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Giovanni Galicia and the Smashing Beats, Donnie Gentile, Wooden Ambulance, Dusty Summer Road, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, April's Dance from the Smart Sound Solo Simplicity Collection, and Turco, Nomads of the Silk Road. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.